Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 22 of Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
What's up?
And we're here to talk about the Sharks. But first of all, we have something to announce, don't we?
We do.
Absolutely. So I want to announce, this is something that we've alluded to in previous shows, but now we can finally release it. We are going to become the official podcast of chompboard.com.
That is very exciting news, dude.
It is exciting news. So I hope people are listening right now that are from Chompboard that haven't heard us before. And to those listeners, we say welcome.
Welcome to Dudes on Hockey.
Welcome to Dudes on Hockey.
Where we talk about hockey and often do it while drinking a beer.
That's right.
Which is the perfect combo for people who are of age and Mark Bell.
And we call each other dude all the time.
That's right, dude.
And it fits.
Dude.
And so for Dudes on Hockey listeners, I hope you'll consider going over to chompboard.com and checking out that community. Because the fact is in my opinion, it's the best Sharks community out there. It's a Sharks message board. It's a very active community, good moderators, an active hockey discussion on all different kinds of topics. There's a game day thread for every Sharks game. People post during the game, usually hundreds of posts during the game. So it's very active. I invite everybody to go over there, check it out, sign up for an account. It's free. And check everything out. So I hope that everyone will avail themselves of that wonderful resource and connect with other Sharks fans as we have.
There are some great topics going right now on Chompboard. I see people talking about Torrey Mitchell when he's coming back, speculating on roster decisions, talking about some minor league hockey, the Stockton Thunder. I always like to get a little talk in there. Someone commenting on Ryan Garner's quarter season report card, which now all of a sudden he's an A-plus guy.
Yeah.
He loves the Sharks.
Sharks are the greatest team ever
Dan
now.
Dan Boyle. Yes. I love them. I would make out with Marcel Gotch for...
I would buy Marcel Gotch a new chess set.
And then my favorite topic is Thrasher's attendance stinks. So there's always great stuff to talk about. And Mike and I are regulars on Chompboard, and we encourage you to check it out at chompboard.com. And welcome to any new listeners. We got a ton of stuff to talk about today.
Absolutely. There's a lot of stuff that's happened this week, both with the Sharks and around the NHL. But first of all, this show is about the listeners, and you can email your questions to questions@dudesonhockey.com. Try to get all the questions we can on the air. And this one I want to start out with because it's from a loyal listener of ours, Ivan Makarov, and it's about something that happened in the past week or two, and it's something that really is a milestone in the Sharks franchise history. And he mentioned that Igor Larionov, as many of you know, was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And for those that don't know, he was the first player to ever wear a Sharks jersey to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So this is a big, big moment, really. He didn't play on the Sharks for a lot of years. Mostly he was famous for playing with Detroit, but the fact is he was a Shark. And so Yvonne asks us, what is our favorite memory of Igor Larionov? So for me, that was sort of around the time that I really got into hockey, which for me was around my freshman year of college. And actually, one of the guys that introduced me to the game was a Russian guy, and he told me all about this great Red Army team. You know, 93-94, that's when Fedorov was big in the league, that's when Roenick was big in the league, and all these kinds of things. And he said, yeah, these guys are great, but really the best line in history was the infamous KLM line, which was Igor Larionov, Sergei Makarov, Vladimir Krutov, for those of you who don't know. And that was really one of the best lines in hockey history. So he really introduced me to Larionov mostly through that. And the other thing I have to say about Larionov is that I went to a Sharks fan fest. They used to have a fan fest at the arena where a lot of Sharks players would sign autographs and you could get memorabilia and all these kinds of stuff. And we went in that year, which I think was 94-95, and we went up to one of the blue coats guys, one of the ushers guys, and we said, hey, you know, we saw a big crowd down the way in the concourse. We said, hey, who's that over there? Who's signing autographs? And this guy who was about 1,000 years old, he said, oh, it's a Merrykov and Larionov. So that's my best Larionov story, I gotta say.
That's good. It's too bad we couldn't see him paired with Saminov.
Saminov and
or Frankenov. Brains.
Jerry Boff.
Gosh, I think my favorite Larionov memory has to be just sort of the the team accomplishment, you know, that they had together. And God, now I'm blanking. They beat the Red Wings.
They did.
They beat the Red Wings. They lost to Toronto in the second round.
That's right.
But the excitement of winning that playoff series, one of the biggest upsets in Stanley Cup history, with them just knocking out the Red Wings. I remember watching that in my college dorm at Santa Clara, and we were going crazy. And that's really the year that I think I became a huge Sharks fan.
Yeah.
And the excitement on the team, and I wish I could have appreciated them for the historical players that they are.
Right.
But it was fun to see them in the brief time that we did. You know that we traded Larionov to Detroit. Mike, do you know for who?
Oh man, no. I know I'm going to know the name of this though. It's not Craig Gianni, although he was
Ray Shepard, who then we traded that same season to.
I want to say Florida.
That's right. For.
Oh man, for Florida for Yves Racine.
Matt Bradley.
Oh wow.
The draft pick that got Matt Bradley. So. We actually traded Larionov for Matt Bradley.
Yeah. Maybe not one
not of the... Dean Lombardi's best trade.
Maybe not one of the finer moments in Sharks history, that particular moment. But thanks for the email, Yvonne, because that's an important milestone, and there's going to be more Sharks to come in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Next Shark will be?
I say Mike Vernon.
Ooh.
He won a cup with Calgary, and he won a Conn Smythe, actually. So I think it's going to be Vernon.
I'm going to have to disagree.
Okay, you're going to go...
Nicholas Sundstrom.
Yes, that is a close second.
Maybe not.
Yeah. All right, so let's get right to it because there's lots of news this week. The Sharks played two games against Nashville since our last podcast, Calgary and Chicago. So let's first sort of talk about the bookends of the week, and that's the two Nashville games. So the first Nashville game, lost. Wasn't a very great-looking game, frankly. Sort of a lot of weird happenings there. Dan Ellis put up a great performance. And then the second game was last night. Sharks kicked the crap out of them. So my question to you is, how are these two, what did the Sharks do differently in the second game that was so much more successful than the first game?
It's because J.P. Dumont's deal with the devil ran out Friday at midnight. So I don't know. We got crapped on by Lady Luck on Tuesday night, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looking back on Tuesday, I didn't think that there was anything necessarily wrong with how they played, other than they got some real bum luck.
A little bit. Some of the first two goals in particular were really fluky. The first one was Boucher sort of misplayed it, so that was a little fluky. And then the second one was the puck went up in the rafters and then didn't come down for 15 or 20 seconds seemingly, and then nobody knew where it was, and then Vernon Fiddler just sort of shot it over Boucher. I mean, those are some weird, weird goals.
Yeah, it was a weird night. And how many shots did we have?
Weird and wacky strikes.
It's just crazy. Whereas last night, I felt like I was watching The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
I was watching Joe running around out there with a bunch of midgets. Gosh, what an embarrassing fight that was between Nickel and Joe.
It was. I think Nickel was way over his head, literally. And he just didn't know what to do after he threw a couple punches and hit Joe like in the elbow. And then he just sort of swung around and took him down. But Jody's
like a lumberjack chopping down a tree. Please don't fall on me. I mean, so many fights but Nashville, they fell behind. They tried to do what a lot of teams did and what Calgary did with some degree of success in the first round of the playoffs last year, just try and get in the Sharks' head, beat them up a little bit, get them off their game. This year, not going to work.
Not going to happen. The Sharks took the power play opportunities, scored their power play goals, waited until they had a nice, comfortable lead, and then were perfectly happy to drop the gloves. And Jody Schelley really beat the tar out of Greg DeVries. I mean, that was a great fight. He rocked him with that.
Cut him open. He needed Mickey in his corner.
He rocked him with
Rocky.
Yeah.
Rocky, do you need a cut? That was a terrible impression.
Yeah.
Almost as bad as this one. Are you ready? I want to do another one. It's
okay.
A little off topic. Though.
Okay, good.
Okay, here we go. Oh, my knee. Oh, sacre bleu. Croissants and bonbons. Someone please. Oh, merde.
Ooh, wow. Our first curse word on Dudes on Hockey. But that's got to be Francois Beauchemin. an excellent French-Canadian accent dude, I got to say.
Was that a curse word?
I believe it is.
And we can take it out.
I think we can leave it in.
Really?
Yeah, there's no French speakers listening to this podcast. All right, we'll get to the Beauchemin news a little bit later on in the show, so let's not get too off track. But, I mean, the national game, yeah, the Sharks, I think the Sharks sort of the theme of the week was the Sharks show that they can beat you any number of ways. And with Nashville, they took a physical opponent and they matched them physically late and they took advantage of the power plays early and cruised. And then with Calgary, it was just an out-and-out domination.
Awesome. Great performance. Calgary was never in the game.
Never.
Never in the game. And one thing that we've talked a little bit about before is, you know, Aginla killed us last year.
Yes.
Just killed us. And he didn't do anything.
Yeah, he was neutralized.
Just completely shut him down. And it was great to see. Sharks sort of exercised some demons, I think, on Thursday, and they punished them.
Yeah.
Embarrassing. Calgary looked defeated.
They did. They didn't know what to do. We chased Kiprusoff after the first period. They brought in Curtis McIlhenny.
Quality.
Exactly.
Keenan, maybe next coach to go?
You think so?
Possible.
Interesting. Well, we'll talk about another coach that's about to go that just went this past week near at the end of the show, and that's Barry Melrose. So that's another story we're going to cover. But let's talk about the Chicago game, because that was a game of a completely different texture. The Sharks traded goals. They had sort of a bad stretch in the second period where they gave up 3 goals, I think, in a 10-minute stretch, which erased a 2-goal lead. And then Chicago took the lead at that point. But yet the Sharks, again, came back in the third and won.
This is the rivalry of the future, I'm telling you. This is the next big thing. Sharks, Blackhawks over the next 4 to 5 years. If these teams stay intact, these are the two best teams in the Western Conference for the long haul here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I hope so. You know, it's always good to see an Original Six team. I like to see Original Six teams succeed, and Chicago has been downtrodden for a number of years, and it seems they finally got a resurgence, and I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them up until the point where they actually play us, in which point I hope that they have a bunch of bad luck all at once.
They're deep. They're young. They're talented. They've got a lot of young players that haven't quite fully developed yet, more of their character players, which I think you might agree that that's where the major difference is right now, is the Sharks are getting really deep quality play from their third and fourth line, and they don't quite have that presence yet.
Not yet. They have a first line that'll shoot the lights out. I mean, Kane and Taves are all over the ice, and those guys it seems like they can generate a scoring chance every shift. And they definitely gave the Sharks some trouble, without a doubt, and they're not going to be a fun playoff opponent, that's for sure.
It's tough to say if you put them in a lineup. If you had to pick between Keith, Seabrook, Campbell, and
Barker,
or Vlasic, Boyle, Blake,
and
Ehrhoff, which 4 do you take?
That's close, man. That is close.
Oof. That's super close.
That's super close.
It's a tough call, but that's how close these teams are. That's how good these teams are. And it's going to be fun, a real fun rivalry to have. I would not be surprised to see them. They need to add a character guy. This would be a team that I wouldn't be stunned if Dallas continues to take a dump.
Right.
To see them add a Mike Modano type.
Wow. That's a bold prediction. I can't imagine Modano ever leaving the Stars, but
yeah, you think he's not thinking about it now?
I think you're. That's.
I think he could be ready. His frequent flyer miles are out,
He
might be ready to use them.
That's an interesting point.
And a team that could really use that sort of veteran presence. You think they wouldn't want to have JR back right now?
Yeah, of course.
He'd make
would.
A huge impact in that dressing room. They don't have that. They don't have that player right now.
Right.
And that's the big difference. We have several. They don't have a veteran presence, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see them make that move at some point this year.
Interesting. So in that vein, we actually have a question from a listener about something close to that with the Sharks. So email questions at dudesonhockey.com. This one is from Mason. He says, with the Sharks off to an incredible start, it's hard to think this far ahead, but what needs do you see the Sharks addressing at the trade deadline? Are there some potential players in the final years of their contract that the Sharks might try and steal and put them over the top heading into the playoffs?
Goalie, first line center, yeah. Power play quarterback, new coach.
Right.
Oh, wait.
Wait, that's Tampa.
What's your initial thoughts on this?
My initial thought is this is not the year for the Sharks to go out and get a Brian Campbell. This is not the year for the Sharks to try and make a wave at the deadline, get a guy that's going to change the complexion of the team. Because right now, team's working fine. It's firing on all cylinders. So if we're going to do anything at the deadline, assuming that the Sharks go more or less in this vein, I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, what are they, 13-3 and, you know, or 16-3 or whatever over the rest of the way, they're not going to be that great. You know, they're not going to go 60-10. But I hope they are.
Unlikely.
But I think they're going to go for a depth move. And if you look at the forwards right now, there's Greer and Mitchell out. So, and yet they're still scoring plenty of goals and they're still playing good third line minutes. The penalty kill is looking good. Power play is looking good. So I think the depth move at this point with Blake in the lineup would be to get depth at D, because we're going to have to play Semenov, and I don't like seeing Frankenstein in the lineup really hardly ever. So that would be the thing I think we would need to address, which would be, you know, a prospect, a mid-level draft pick, something along those lines. So I don't know. You think I know you said earlier in the year that the Sharks were going to trade a forward. So are you now recanting?
I'm not recanting, because I think that it's possible if, when Mitchell comes back, if they deem that one of these guys is expendable in order to get back some very valuable assets, it'd have to be a great package, including a very high first round pick, I think, in order to get one of the Sharks' top six forwards off the ice. But I said that before the Sharks were playing blockbuster best team in the league hockey.
Right.
So why would you dare mess with it unless you have to? That's a move that probably will be made in the off season, where you see them shed a little payroll and try and get some flexibility. I think you're right. We'll see like a Brian Boucher type move where
a guy
who's a fringe player who maybe has been out of the league. I think if you're looking for NHL quality depth, maybe a guy like Brian Berard would be on Doug Wilson's radar. Mm-hmm. He certainly is an upgrade over Semenov. That in the playoffs, you'd certainly rather have Brian Berard scratched and waiting instead of Semenov.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see that type of move happen. The Sharks kind of keeping their eye on the waiver wire and seeing who might be available late in the year.
Yeah. Mason, I don't think that means we're going to be looking at guys who are in the last year of their contract, and we're going to try and make a trade for those guys and re-sign them, because frankly, the Sharks don't have a lot of glaring needs right now, and there's no reason for them to go out and shake it all up and bring in some new guys and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
Sharks,
I think it'll be quiet at the deadline this year.
I think so. First time in a while. Okay, so let's look ahead to Washington, because that's really the only game that's we're going to see between now and the next time we record this podcast. So let's talk about Washington. Washington has a lot of another team with a lot of good young talent. They have maybe the best line in hockey with Ovechkin and Semin. If Semin's going to be back in the lineup, I think Semin's leading the league in points right now. So those guys are going to be tough to shut down. What are we going to do against Washington?
Same thing we did against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Same thing we did against Detroit. Same thing we did today, Ginla. I have no reason to believe that they're not. The coaching staff seems so sharp that I think that they're going to be able to shut them down. They've just been able to do it. I mean, maybe this will be the matchup that's going to cause problems for them. It seems like the only thing that can beat the Sharks right now is the low cycle. Mm-hmm. Is Washington capable of doing an effective low cycle?
I don't know about that. They don't play the same kind of style as Florida does. I mean, they're more of a skill team. I don't think they're going to grind it in the corners the way Florida and Nashville.
So if they want to go toe-to-toe with the Sharks, every team that's done that this year has lost.
Yeah, they've come up short.
If you're going to try and go head-to-head with them, you're going to fall short. So I think it's going to be an awesome matchup. I hope Semin's in the lineup. But I've got no reason to believe that anything's going to change. And Teodor will probably play out of his mind, because every goalie who comes into the Shark Tank seems to be playing well, unless your name rhymes with Ripper Ruff.
Yeah, so, this it's you got to admit, though, this is a weird feeling. I mean, this is the first time in my memory as being a Sharks fan that I expect the Sharks to win almost every game. I mean, I know they're not going to win every game, but you look at every individual matchup and you say the Sharks are ahead in this matchup.
Yeah. I haven't felt this good since I had my Sean Hines jersey.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's
I mean,
a great way to feel, and, you know, some people might say that we're jumping the gun, and some people might say that, you know, there's still a lot of room for them to fall off, and they might be right, but there's certainly there's very little to criticize about the way the Sharks have played. They've played with heart, which we've questioned in the past. All the players that struggled last year, especially Patrick Marleau, has stepped up, and the new guys, their impact has been felt. The coaching staff has been great. Are the third jerseys being debuted on Saturday?
I believe they are, and I think the following Wednesday when we play Chicago again, they're going to give out free T-shirts.
Ooh. So. Will the spelling be right this time?
I hope so.
Whose side are you on?
Who apostrophe S side are you on?
Ouch.
But it's an interesting feeling because I can't. The Sharks are just doing everything right now, and this is one of the first times I've ever thought that about this team. So it's something to savor, Sharks fans. Let's not. Of course, we're all thinking ahead to what's going to happen in the playoffs. Can the Sharks replicate this kind of performance in the playoffs? And the answer is we're going to find out in due time.
There's a long way to go. Yeah. We're a knee injury away from there being a lot of problems. Something happens to Dan Boyle.
Yeah.
The season turns.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to knock on your desk here to make sure I didn't just jinx it. But,
well,
looking good.
You can see, speaking of a turnaround injury, let's head to the shootout because the first story is something we alluded to earlier. Francois Beauchemin is the number three defenseman, plays a ton of minutes in Anaheim, and he is out for the season with a knee injury. So
I think I tore my meniscus.
But, yeah, so now the Ducks.
It hurts like a creme brulee.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know.
But it's funny.
I watched too much Looney Tunes. It's a bad Pepe Le Pew. I'm sure he doesn't talk like that. Wait, I sound like Steve Bernier.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. It works for everything. So, but
pass me the puck, Henrik.
So what are the Ducks going to do now? So now they're going to have to play Steve.
Lose.
Right.
They're in trouble, man.
It could be. Because, I mean, this is a team, when they won the Cup, keep in mind, they played Niedermeyer and Pronger 30 minutes a night, and they played basically three defensemen.
Yeah, well, hold on. They've got a lot of depth on the blue line. They've still got O'Brien.
No.
They've got Schneider.
No.
They got Ken Klee when they traded.
No.
Joe DePenta?
I don't think so.
I guess they're screwed.
They could be. We could see. I mean, we could see a huge gulf show up here in the Pacific Division.
So now they've got Steve Montador and Brett Hedekin, two guys who were signed either very late in training camp or sort of afterthoughts, playing third and fourth defensive minutes, and they've got Pronger and Niedermeyer, who are no spring chickens, playing major minutes. And you know Pronger's going to get hurt. He always gets hurt. At some point, he'll have a foot injury. I think they're I'd be very concerned if I was a Ducks fan, for sure.
Yeah, their season could be hanging by a thread at this point. It really could. And they've had trouble scoring. So if the top line gets in a slump again, and they start letting in goals, then they could take a huge slide in a very short amount of time. But
could you see them possibly, as we're sort of talking about the trade deadline and speculating, just vomited a little bit. I was talking about the Ducks too much. It got me upset. Could you see them possibly maybe moving one of their top forwards to Florida and getting in on the Bouwmeester deal?
I mean, it's conceivable. I don't know why you would do it. They just signed these guys to a lot of money. I mean,
their future on the blue line is grim, and nothing.
It's an interesting point. It sort of depends on how the next two or three months go for the Ducks. if the next 2 or 3 months don't go very well, then the Ducks could very well try to make a run and switch it up. But if they're sort of hanging by a thread, I don't see why they would trade one of those big three, the top three guys, in order to try and make a run at Bomeister.
Because they got Bobby Ryan just kind of hanging out.
Well, Bobby Ryan's up with club now that
So do you need, could you trade Kunitz?
I guess you could. It's interesting. Maybe we'll have to have a Ducks guy on the show and ask him about that.
Let's do it.
Okay, I think we should. Maybe in a coming week we'll talk to a friend of ours, or we'll find somebody that likes the Ducks that we can actually stand, which is kind of a tall order sometimes. But we'll think of it. So let's go to the next story that's happened, and second of three big stories. Barry Melrose got fired 16 games in. He's gone. So, I mean, he claimed that the players got together and got him run out of town. And
do you have any reason not to believe that?
No, because I don't know why you would fire a coach 16 games in, period, much less, you know. I don't know what they're doing. They did everything backwards. They hired the GM after the coach. You know, it's just, it's a mess. They're playing like a fantasy team. They're just
Is Al Davis them. Own the... Tampa Bay Lightning.
He might.
Are they going to hire George Bush to run the team? Because everything is, boy, another team that I wouldn't want to be a season ticket holder for the Lightning. Boy, they do a false sell on you in the offseason, get you all excited with a fancy new website and all these players coming in. And then they hire a GM who's got other ideas.
Right.
And
a first-time GM.
It's a mess. And the team is poorly constructed, and he's got a lot of work to do. And they're going to have to move some parts around for sure. And they're going to make some more major changes, I think, because I think it's a lost season.
Wow. Already calling it.
They've really responded to talk it. They lost tonight to Florida.
Oh. So.
In Tampa.
Oh, God.
That's meant nothing. I know you got to give Talkett a little bit of time.
Of course.
It took Quenneville a couple games to really put in his stamp on it, but no wins since Talkett's been there. That Tampa,
I mean, that's to be honest, that's out of the ordinary. Usually when you're bringing a new coach, especially if there's a coach that players don't like, you take him out, install a new guy. Usually you see a bit of a bump, right? You see that next couple games, the players are playing well, they win a couple games. Sometimes they can go on a little bit of a streak there. And this is actually, I would say, rare for the fact that this team actually is now losing games, even with the guy that apparently they like.
Brought in a bunch of veterans who are expecting to win now, and they're not. So they're probably like, well, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Gary Roberts is going to want out soon.
Yeah.
Ryan Malone and his dad are going to go move closer to the Campbells so they can live together and, you know, a little commune or whatever they're going to do.
I don't know. Yeah, that's an ongoing saga I'm sure we'll talk about in future shows. But let's get to the last story. Brian Burke, another Duck story. Brian Burke is out as the GM of Anaheim. He's already playing footsie with the Toronto Maple Leafs, so I think he's going to be installed there within a matter of weeks, if not a matter of days.
Do you think Ron Wilson and Brian Burke kiss on the second or third date?
I'll go third, because Ron Wilson seems very chaste.
Yeah, he's kind of hard. He plays hard to get.
I think he does.
I think
so.
It's his defensive system.
Right.
Boy, but Toskala needs to close his 5-hole. Hi-yo!
Hey.
The worst kept secret in hockey is now about to become a reality.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Everybody knew that this was going to happen.
Yeah,
and it's going
to
happen.
Why didn't the Ducks do this in the offseason? So now this is another thing that's going to happen to the Ducks franchise in the middle of the season. I mean, they knew that he wasn't going to re-sign. I have to think something happened there. Or you think Brian Burke just said, screw it. Get me out of here.
I don't know. I think Burke maybe called up Solani and Niedermeyer and asked them how to act completely inappropriately during the middle of a season.
Could be.
How can I hold the team hostage? Let's go to lunch.
Oh, it's going to be great. But that does it this week for Dudes on Hockey. So I hope you'll listen to us again next week. Same time, same place. And you can always read our blog online at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. Say goodbye to the people, dude.
Goodbye, dude.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.